That was Last Quokka with a track called Ningaloo, which is exactly what we are talking about now here on Artbeat on RTRFM at 92.1. I have Tim Winton in the studio with me talking about this documentary series that he has written, narrated and executive produced that is going to be screening on ABC TV on the 16th of May. Tim, welcome.
Thank you. I think that's coming up soon, isn't it? It's next Tuesday.
I do struggle with time. But I know it's the 12th today, so yes. Tuesday sounds about right. Yeah, Tuesday. Yeah. So you... I feel like I should be calling you Mr. Winton. Like, I had a bit of a moment there.
Well, I'm old enough, yeah. Uncle Tim.
Where I was like, oh, I can't just say Tim. Oh, no, that doesn't sound right.
My grandkids call me Tim, so why shouldn't you?
But, and I feel like that is a bit of a hangover from reading your books in school and, like, having them as part of the curriculum. I get a lot of people who say, oh, no, I read that book in school. I can't even look at it. It brings up so many bad memories. How do you feel about your books being part of a school curriculum that perhaps is antithetical to your own, like, ideologies?
Yeah, look, it's a struggle. I mean, you don't write books to make them obstacles for people to negotiate in their education. You write books for pleasure and to move the furniture around a bit in people's minds. So yeah, it's odd. It's really a strange thing to realise that people are required, if not forced, to read your books. But then, you know, I get lots and lots and lots of letters from kids who read my work. Probably the most letters I get are about Blueback. So obviously, you know, not everybody is permanently traumatised. And I do remember, you know, reading certain books when I was a kid at school and being required to, and going back to them later in life and just getting so much joy from the experience and thinking, well, maybe I wasn't ready at the time. But my preference is always to find books in the course of your own life, you know, voluntarily. But
I feel like books find you. I feel like sometimes books that you do read in high school and maybe struggle with, or you don't get, they don't speak to you, can turn back up later on in life, and you go, oh, what?
Yeah, different experience. I mean, I've read the same books over and over again. It's a different experience each time because you are a different person each time.
I think that I was particularly enamoured with The Riders when I was about 19. Tim, I'm not going to lie to you, I do have a copy of it. I've got my copy of it from 1995, and I'm going to shamelessly get you to sign that for me. Thank
okay,
you
no
much.
Worries. It'll only cost you an extra $5.
When it comes to writing and getting these worlds into the pages of a book, how did you then transfer those kind of skills, those kind of world building things that are happening in your brain into the screen, into this documentary?
Yeah, well, it's a totally different form. I mean, it's I've never written natural history before. And so to be asked to write, you know, 3 hours of nature television, was quite a challenge. I'm having to compress all kinds of scientific factual information into very small amounts of text, and trying to make it beautiful as well. Because you know, I'm not a science writer. I come from a more kind of lyrical background, trying to make things beautiful. Because that's what an artist. You know, you want to confront and to enchant. So it was a great challenge and a tough gig. And I needed a bit of convincing, I can tell you.
Did you?
Definitely.
What did they say? What was it that, like, tipped you over into the, yes, okay, I'm going to do that?
Well, if you don't do it, we won't get made. And no one had ever done a full-length blue-chip natural history series about Ningaloo, and it's a really timely moment because, you know, Ningaloo's at a kind of turning point. It's under a lot of new industrial threats, and we just thought, if not now, when? And if not me, who. I would rather someone else did it, to be honest, because I could have... my life would have been a little easier. But then I had, you know, we had a lot of fun and we got to do things that normal people aren't able to do, you know. I got to hold a 450-kilogram dugong in my arms. I got to touch a whale shark, all the things that, you know, yeah. the normal civilian is forbidden to do. But also, it was, you know, we got to fund... some new science and learn stuff about a place that's really vulnerable, particularly the Exmouth Gulf, which is should have been part of the World Heritage Area. UNESCO wanted it to be, but it was white-handed by certain industrial interests, and this year really consequential decisions are being made about Exmouth Gulf, and it's a good time to have all the science and the beautiful pictures about this place available to the world, because the show goes global, so that people can see what we have and what we can celebrate, but what there is to lose.
And so what were the implications of not becoming a UNESCO World Heritage Site? What can... And I'm assuming we're talking about mining companies. What can they now do in that area that perhaps being a World Heritage Site would have kind of blocked them from doing?
Yeah, to be considered for World Heritage, you need national heritage, and before that, you need to have a national park or marine park. So, Exmouth Gulf isn't even a marine park. It's got twice as many fish species as Ningaloo Reef, but it's not even a marine park. So. Essentially, what that means is the gate is left open to developers, and that's why they're currently circling. You know, there's a kind of a deep water port being proposed for near Pebble Beach at Quailing Pool in the whale sanctuary, which is bonkers, and a huge German salt mine being proposed in the wetlands on the eastern side of the Gulf. They're just the two current starters. You know, we knocked one off a couple of years ago with Subsea 7. We're trying to build a pipeline facility. So until we get those protections in place, the developers are just going to keep coming because, you know, any crack in the wall, they'll try it.
They'll get through. So this is really about bringing attention to a place that is at risk.
Yeah, I mean, it's at risk from these immediate threats, these kind of developments, but it's also at risk more broadly from, you know, global warming. And if we don't, you know, what people don't realise is that Ningaloo is surrounded by the fossil fuel industry. The rigs are just offshore. You can see them now. You can see the flames burning at night. From the flares, from the rigs. If we don't get out of the fossil fuel business quickly, all our coral reefs, including Ningaloo, will be gone in our children's lifetime.
If you've just tuned in, we are talking to Tim Winton about his new documentary, Ningaloo. He's written, narrated and executive produced. Narrated, does that mean that we see you on screen?
Sadly, yes, and I apologise in advance for that.
Good face
for radio, me.
Do you dress or you like boardies?
No, it's boardies and double pluggers and boots when required. But no, I don't present in the sort of Attenborough way. I just talk to the scientists and the experts and the traditional owners, and we try to make it more personal, because it's kind of a personal journey as well as a scientific journey. But, yeah, pretty uncomfortable for me. I mean, I do spend a lot of my time trying to stay off the telly. and there I am, you know, shooting 57 weeks. It was a kind of a crazy once-in-a-lifetime thing. I don't think I'll ever repeat the experience, and I'm sure I won't be asked to repeat it either.
Well, thank you so much for making time in your schedule to come in and have a chat to us about it. Ningaloo is going to be premiering on ABC TV, or you can catch it on ABC iView from the 16th of May. We have confirmed that is Tuesday. You can check it out. Check out Tim and his pluggers and find out why we should be advocating for more protections for Ningaloo Reef. Tim, thank you so much.
Pleasure.